This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm superstar Frank Morano. How great is this song? People are even, this many decades after this song has been out, people are still making their own versions
here
of this song.
Here in Borough Park, we want to start a branch of crime fighting. I want to borrow like his name. We want to call it the Guardian Jews. We're going to be the Guardian Jews. The Guardian Jews. We want Curtis's permission to use the name. And we even have a theme song. We use Curtis's theme song. It's, hold on, I'm not tired yet. I've been running for Hashem for a long time. I'm not tired yet. Hold on, we're not tired yet.
All right. It's Friday, right? Okay. Richard Belzer was a terrific comedian. He was a, you know, I didn't realize, Tony, that when Richard Belzer passed away, that you watched all those Law and Order shows. So you must have really liked Richard Belzer then.
Yeah, I like Bells.
Yeah. Did you ever get to meet him?
Yes, I did.
Where did you meet him? I mean,
he was a guest on the Joey Reynolds show years ago.
Yeah, you know what, Joey, by the way, and I talked about how Joey had had taken a fall and was in the hospital. Apparently he's doing much better now. I think he's home. He's he's doing okay. We exchanged emails recently, so thank goodness. But he was able to get all these really great people to come in studio. I don't know how he did that in the middle of the night. Me, I ask somebody, hey, can you be available for a 15-minute phone conversation at 2:30 in the morning? And it's like, oh, no, I can't do it. I got to be
Frank,
up.
You know, I think the reason why we were able to get comedians to come in where we were located at, we were located between Broadway, between 40th and 41st. We were right in the
still
of Times Square.
Still, I feel like everybody, just to get them to be anywhere late at night, everyone wants to tape, everyone wants to, I can't, give me a break. Joey said that when he was still in the hospital, he did not lose his sense of humor. He says, Frank, God don't make no mistakes. Now I have time to hear you. Exciting political news in my family. I have just learned my granddaughter is co-chairman of the Dead Listeners Society, and she is platforming at TikTok. So there you go. His sense of humor remains intact. All right. But anyway, Richard Belzer, allow Tony to get me digressed like that with his knowledge of Law and Order. Richard Belzer used to tell this joke, and the thing that made Belzer's comedy so funny was that so much of what he said rang true. And, you know, he was really into, he's written several books, I've read many of them, and he was really into calling out shenanigans, government, corporations, conspiracies, you name it. He was even more of a conspiracy theorist than Jesse Ventura was. And really interesting. But he used to tell this one joke. He used to do this whole routine that the first thing that happens when you're elected president is these men dressed all in black take you into a small theater and they show you an angle to the Kennedy assassination that no one's ever seen before. And then you turn to them and say, all right, what country do you want me to bomb next? And the reason it's so funny is because all these guys, when they come into power, they become the same guy. They become the same guy. Nowhere is that better personified than in the person of Speaker Mike Johnson. before Mike Johnson got elected speaker, he was a constitutional lawyer, knew the Constitution, and would do these hearings where he'd, you know, question people like Mayorkas about, you know, the coordinating with the social media companies to censor content. He was great. And he was kind of, he was not even in the leadership of the House. And if you look at those hearings at that time, and if you were to go back in time and say to me, hey, that guy that knows the Constitution, that seems to care about the Constitution, that's actually doing a decent job holding some cabinet officials' feet to the fire on things like social media censorship, that guy's going to be the Speaker of the House. First, I would have laughed at you. And second, I would have said, oh, that's only possible in an alternate reality. How can I move to that alternate reality where that's possible? Well, sure enough, now Mike Johnson has become Kevin McCarthy. Because not only this guy, when he was just a regular rank and file member of the House, voted against giving Ukraine another $300 million in aid. The guy went from not wanting to give Ukraine $300 million to now leading the effort, along with President Trump, to give Ukraine another $60 billion. Understand. He went from opposing $300 million to now wanting to give them $60 billion. Billion with a B. And it's not just Ukraine where he's found religion. It's warrantless wiretapping. It's really whatever the corporate establishment in Washington wants. He's only too happy to go in that direction. And he's been rewarded. You know, when he first got elected, they were portraying him as some right-wing lunatic that had gotten elected. Now the mainstream press is comparing him to Churchill. I tweeted a headline. You could find it on my Twitter. Where they actually did that. They compared that to Churchill. What a great leader he is. How did he do it? Oh, my goodness. Well, how did he do it? He just does whatever the corporations say. Now, what caused his awakening on the issue of Ukraine? He claims that it was due to intelligence reports. Well, apparently that's not entirely true. It's he was lobbied heavily by Ukrainian evangelical groups about changing his position. And look, the corporations, the big businesses that stand to make bopfo bucks by continuing this war in Ukraine, by continuing this war in the Middle East, and by having a war in Asia, they have no problem filling the coffers of everybody that keeps the gravy train rolling for them. Not only do they get wined and dined by lobbyists in Washington, but their campaign coffers are going to be filled. And in the case of Mike Johnson, who's trying to hold on to a very slim majority, he's got to make sure that the campaign coffers of a bunch of his members that are in tight districts remains filled. So you think our country is already running a deficit. We are pretty soon going to be spending more on interest to the national debt than we do on almost anything else except defense and, you know, Social Security and Medicare. And you'd think maybe we're not in the best position to just give money out to everybody. But no, sure enough, we are. We're not only our taxes are not only paying for two current wars, but one potential future war with China and Taiwan. Meanwhile, you look at what's happening at the southern border and it's chaos. It's chaos. Migrants are flooding into America. And do you ever ask yourself the question? I've asked it on Foreign Policy many times, but it's been a while since we asked this question with respect to the migrant crisis specifically. Who benefits? We know who benefits with this war in the Middle East, wars in the Middle East, and the war in Europe going on. It's the military-industrial complex. They'll also benefit tremendously if this Russia, this Taiwan-China war comes to fruition. But who benefits from all of this, all of these migrants flooding into our country and the excessive cheap labor that comes with that? So rather than focus on the migrants themselves, because I think it's unfair to demonize a lot of these people. And, you know, my wife has befriended one of these migrants. And, you know, the stories that she could tell you about why she came to this country and what she's hoping for, they would bring you to tears. And let's talk about who's benefiting from this open border while your resources are spent on war. So Congress just granted $95 billion of aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Curiously, though, they're unable to grant the necessary border protections, the necessary increase in immigration judges, the necessary increase in the Border Patrol. They're somehow not able to find bipartisan agreement on that. But they're able to find plenty of money to borrow for war. And by the way, do you remember being asked to vote on any of those? If you were, with the exception of maybe Israel, because Israel is very popular now with many sections of the American public, if you were to ask Americans at a time when we're running a deficit, do you want to give $95 billion to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel? Do you think that would pass? I don't. But doesn't matter. What doesn't matter what the people want, because the people that we've elected, they don't work for us. They work for big corporations and those who lobby them. And so why is there not more expenditure on securing the border? And who benefits from this migration crisis continuing? Well, could it be possible that some of the largest brands in America, some of the most recognizable names in corporate life, are benefiting from crushing your ability to earn fair wages and by flooding the market with cheaply available labor? Well, you better believe it. And what amount of lobbying goes on to ensure that the border crisis goes unaddressed, that wars continue and that you pay high taxes and yet you remain poor and potentially unable to negotiate for better wages? Because you don't like it? Well, I'll find someone else who can do it for cheaper. So who's causing the wars? Who's causing the border crisis? And why are ordinary Americans shouldering the burden for both? So, putting aside the foreign aid bill, you talk about the border crisis, men and women coming all over the place. What else is going on? Well, we see companies like Tyson. We knew Tyson Foods. Tyson lays off thousands of workers after closing a pork factory in Perry, Iowa. Here's a little bit of, you know, if you're not following the story with Tyson, this is a report from KCCL.
The meat processing plant in Perry, employing more than 1,000 people, will be closing.
Tyson Foods announced it will be closing the fresh meats plant there. It's currently the largest employer in town.
So Tyson lays off 1,200 American workers after closing its pork factory, only later to announce that they have found, oh, gee, look, what did we find? 52,000 jobs for migrants. Think about that. An American company fires 1,200 American workers and then finds a way, same company, different plant or plants, finds a way to hire 52,000 migrants who will work for anything. So you could fire Americans who are expensive and employ poor people from around the world because we care about them. And we'll lobby Washington to get them worker legal status, that they can legally work in the country because we care about them. That's why. It's certainly not about us wanting to make the most money possible and pay the people that actually live in this country and work in this country legally as little as possible. It's just a coincidence how the very powerful interests benefit from open borders and migration, and therefore from the border not being correctly policed or patrolled. And perhaps this is why your tax dollars are being spent on foreign wars rather than on domestic solutions that might benefit ordinary Americans. A record surge of illegal border crossings in recent years has fueled this whole debate over immigration and border security emerging as a key voter concern. And I was really hoping that we could talk with Lee Fong, who's one of my favorite guests and one of the best independent reporters in America. But he was unavailable this week on the days that we had openings and vice versa. So he had a terrific article, which I've been wanting to talk about all week, but this is the first chance that I've had. American corporations help fuel mass migration. And he gets into this story of this meatpacking plant, Tyson Foods. And they announced plans last month to shutter this pork plant in Perry, lay off 1,200 employees. And it brought some rare attention to one of the most influential, least scrutinized dynamics of America's mass migration problem. And that's the role played by large, politically connected corporations seeking to blunt wage growth. This is not a time of crisis for Tyson, because the same day that the company made the announcement of that they were firing these 1,200 workers, Bloomberg News quoted Garrett Dolan, an executive, as saying that the firm had been actively recruiting from the waves of migrants who've ended up in cities such as New York seeking asylum. I'm going to link to this article because I'm not going to read the whole thing. And it's really an article that deserves a fair reading. You can check it out at my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. I just posted it. Read it when you can. And basically, Tyson Foods, which already employs some 42,000 immigrants, said it had placed some of the migrants to work at its plants in Tennessee. Quote from Garrett Dolan, "We would like to employ another 42,000 if we could find them." I just want you to understand, this is a quote in Bloomberg the same day they announced they were firing 1,200 Americans. Now, these dual headlines caused a firestorm on social media, some people calling for a boycott over claims that the company was replacing Americans with immigrants who would work for less. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance described the company's actions as the decimation of the American dream. But unfortunately, Tyson Foods is far from alone in acting this way. Many corporations have called for increased immigration as a solution for rapidly rising wages. And several business groups are also pressing policymakers to support programs to extend legal protection to people that arrive here without documentation. Quote, "Any pro-immigration policies that would be implemented will benefit us on increasing the availability of labor throughout the country." That's from Andrew Masterman, the former head of Brightview, the nation's largest commercial landscaping company. Here's another quote from him. And that's whether that's immigrant labor that exists in the country or whether it's guest immigrant labor coming in. We're fans of that. In 2022, Scott Salmiers, the president of ABM Industries, a nationwide building maintenance and janitorial firm, raised similar concerns on an earnings call. Quote, "The labor pressures we are currently experiencing are largely unprecedented." Why? He cited reduced immigration, historically low unemployment, and a sudden demand from an economy in rebound for raising wages. You see, when unemployment is low, that's bad news for these corporations. That means corporations have to pay you more. The lower unemployment is, as workers, the better position we're in to bargain for higher salaries. They don't want to give us higher salaries. They want to pay slave labor or almost slave labor who are not currently in the country. So the Business Roundtable and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they are some of the most influential lobby groups that helped mobilize support for the Trump tax cuts in 2017. They have now turned to immigration reform to confront these dynamics in the labor market. And that's where we are. The reason that nothing is being done on immigration is not an accident, and it's not the result of incompetence. It's the same reason they were able to find a way to get $90 to $95 billion to two current wars and one future war. It's because that's what the people who have money, influence, and power want. And that's where we are. You just have to, it's like all the president's men. Follow the money. Follow the money. So the same day that Tyson makes the announcement, Bloomberg quotes this executive as saying they want, they've not only hired 42,000 immigrants, but they want to hire 42,000 more. It's simply supply and demand. And that's whether immigrant labor that exists in the country or whether it's guest immigrant labor coming in. This is crazy. So you have a situation where, let's say you were to close the border and stop this flood of migrants coming in. These corporations would have a real tough time because they might actually have to start paying people that are working in the country legally a fair wage. So while a political nightmare for some, it poses an economic opportunity to business interests and to corporate interests. So corporate interests are actively lobbying for a change in immigration policy. And it brings to the forefront an important principle. Circumstances that might be terrible for you, punitive for you, might be beneficial to powerful elites. For example, during the lockdown, you know, last time Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was on this show, he pointed out all the millionaires and billionaires that were born during the lockdown. Many people in low-paying jobs suffered because their jobs simply were shut down. And yet billionaires saw a massive increase in wealth. We don't live in the same world. So the fact that we have the same government seems a little unfair, doesn't it? And who do those governments work for? Is it ordinary people like you and me who wouldn't ever vote to send another $60 billion to Ukraine? No. It's the super wealthy that are funding their campaigns and lobbying them that hold the stock of Boeing and McDonnell Douglas and Raytheon and all of these companies that benefit from continuous war. And it's all these companies that are benefiting, not the same companies, but it's the same interests that are benefiting from open borders and cheap labor. The Business Roundtable and the Chamber of Commerce, the same influential groups that pushed for the Trump tax cuts are the same groups that are pushing for these open borders. So Donnie King is the CEO of Tyson Foods. But by the way, what are the chances of that? That Don King would be running Tyson and screwing things up, at least from my perspective. So Tyson Foods is being led by Don King. He's a member of that Business Roundtable. And these guys, the Chamber of Commerce has cited wage growth as a top concern for business members. And they've previously called for doubling of the rate of legal immigration. And business lobbyists were very quick to hail President Biden's decision last year to extend TPS protections for over 470,000 Venezuela immigrants. Do you think that's because they're great humanitarians? I don't. I think it's because they want to exploit these people, pay them as little as possible, so they don't have to pay you anything. And the administration has since announced an extension for programs for people from El Salvador, Honduras, Nepal, Nicaragua. And they're always pretending, you know, oh, we got to help these immigrants. It's the right thing to do. Those poor guys, they've had it so tough. No, Trump, they want to do this to make money. So this goes on with Amazon, Tyson Foods, Walmart, construction firms, and a lot of other pretty powerful corporations. And yet, I feel like most people don't know who benefits from the status quo and keeping things the way they are. You know, I get, we can certainly gather that Amazon, given their attempts to stop unions from starting, and Walmart, same thing, and their hostility towards organized labor, that they don't have the highest regard for their workers across the world. Yet their primary concern is our immigrants, right? What their primary concern is can we pay people the minimum amount possible without being seen as so disgusting that our business model is effective? That seems to be the way that these things operate. So read this Li Fong article if you can. I think it's really interesting. I link to it, facebook.com/MoranoFan. If you want to comment, be my guest, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. We'll go through some of the news of the day with Noam Layden straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Everyone is working for the weekend, although hopefully some of you are off. I've just been informed that the gentleman who just walked into our studio is off all weekend, which we're all very excited about. Let's welcome.
Stand by for The Other Side of Midnight's news.
From New York City. The Other Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. We're getting more and more detail that suggests that King Charles' health is bad. It's deteriorating. We've never really learned what kind of cancer he has. The palace did tell us that he has cancer and that he is getting some form of treatment. But normally I would dismiss all of this talk because there's always talk about what's going on in Buckingham Palace, what's going on with the prince, king, the queen. And a lot of it you can dismiss because it's just hearsay.
Sure.
It's but when some other when people start to weigh in who seem to have some sort of influence in terms of what's going on, I pay attention. So the 75-year-old monarch has remained largely out of the limelight since Easter. You saw him on Easter. He looked kind of gaunt. He shook hands with about 55 people outside of church. But we have not seen King Charles since. So that's what, 3-4 weeks ago?
Right, yeah.
And normally you see him out and about relatively often at different events, of course. And there were plans for him to do some overseas travel to Australia. It's not clear if that's going to happen. But here's where I start to believe that some of these stories are true. Tina Brown, the famed publisher,
right,
has an incredibly tight relationship and always has, starting with the queen, now going forward to the king. And she is telling people around her that things are not looking good for the king. And there, since we don't know what form of cancer he has, the only thing they said was that he does not have prostate cancer. But if he has, you can think of a whole bunch of other forms of cancer where if he has an aggressive form of it,
yeah,
he might not win that battle.
And I know they haven't indicated what kind of cancer he has. Have they indicated what kind of treatment he's in the midst of or exploring?
Yeah, you know, he is going to some form of a treatment where it's outside of the palace, where he has to travel to some form of a medical center, and that he's doing it on a pretty regular basis, but that's it. You know, they've always been very mum. They won't tell us a whole lot. The fact that she's talking about it suggests there's something there. There's also talk that they're updating his funeral plans. Now, apparently this is normal procedure. That was what the palace will tell you, that they're always updating how they're going to handle the funeral of somebody from Buckingham Palace. With the queen, they said it went off without a hitch, that she had planned every detail, and it was to her wish and liking when she, I guess we can only assume it was to her wish and liking after she passed away, and that his is being updated as well. And so that causes some form of alarm, but we've seen that happen before. But everybody around saying they're worried, Of course, nobody will go on record and say that they've seen something that suggests that he is as ill as they're suggesting, but it doesn't look good. And look, there, obviously, there's plenty of times before people get cancer and they don't win that battle, no matter how what kind of money you have, no matter what kind of treatments available to you.
It's also such a shame in that he had waited so long. I mean, I'm sure he didn't want his mother to die, but he had waited so long for his to become the king and to have this sort of potentially serious illness so early into his reign is just such a bummer.
And the thought is, by the way, obviously Prince William would then become the king, but the thought was that William and Kate were hoping that he would hold on to king for at least 10, 15 years so that their kids could be old enough to handle the spotlight that comes with becoming part of this whole big ordeal that being a king is. But it may happen sooner than later. Look, we're wishing the king the best, but everything suggests that he is sicker than the palace is letting on. Mm. Vladimir Putin, he is canceling all of these military parades. You know, they love a military parade in Russia, going back to the communist days, going forward to now. Whenever they can roll out those tanks and the military members of the military and march them through the streets with just these beautiful parades, they will. But it seems that some of these Victory Day parades, it's usually May 9th every year, they hold these huge victory parades all across the country in Moscow and in smaller cities. But we're watching one by one as these parades are being canceled this year because they are really worried about Ukraine's long-range drone availability and that they may use this to take out some military leaders during these parades. So one by one, especially the parades that are closer to the Ukraine border, those are already off the table. They're not going to happen. There is talk that the parade that takes place in Moscow will be a procession of some of the tanks. But instead of having the biggest leaders in the nation, including Putin, march, there'll be portraits of these veterans and leaders on these tanks and on these floats as they go down the parade route. So they won't actually take part. Again, they're worried about Ukraine's ability to disrupt these parades. The fireworks show, that's been canceled already. Normally they do a huge fireworks show. Not going to happen this year. And so no military might on display in the way that we usually do see every May 9th.
All right. I mean, you know, obviously I hate that this war is disrupting so many aspects of people's lives. But of all the things that I could be upset about with this war, I mean, canceling this military parade, it doesn't really affect me much. I'm not too worried about it.
No, I guess. And maybe for most Russians, they may feel the same way.
Yeah.
Have you tried to get a reservation at any of the hottest restaurants here in the city?
Not really. No. If I'm dining at any of those hottest restaurants, it's because someone has invited me. So I'm never going to be the person that's the tip of the spear saying, oh, let's eat here, so-and-so. No.
You know, once in a while, there'll be some hot restaurant, and I'll go online to try to get a reservation, and it'll be like a seven-month wait, or even longer. And one of them, like, well, the River Cafe, that's been there forever. But some of these restaurants, that you go through a period of time where they're incredibly hot, white hot, and you want to get in, and it's impossible to get in. And this was news to me, but there is this whole organization of people who make these reservations, and then they sell them online, and they make full-time salaries. And some of these people are finally talking about this very openly. One of them is this, he's a kid. His name is Alex Eisler. He's a sophomore at Brown University. He doesn't even live in New York. And he has this down to a technique where he sells his reservations to people who want them. Now, imagine, right, if you're coming, let's say, to New York on business or for the weekend.
Sure.
You can't deal with waiting for a reservation.
Right. It's like a ticket broker for a high-profile sporting event or Broadway play.
Exactly. So you'll say, hey, you know what? I'll pay for a table for six if just I know I can get in on a Friday night. So Alex Eisler said he made $70,000 last year reselling reservations. He has made relationships, not just to the online ones where he's been able to connect that way, but he actually talks to the restaurants. He knows the people who work there. So sometimes he can get reservations on the spot. Whether he's sharing money with these people, we don't know. But we've watched time after time as people over the last year have paid him big money. In fact, some of these restaurants, this one couple came in just a couple weeks ago. Carbon is a big restaurant now. Everybody wants to get in there. It's impossible to get in. It's in the Village. Family paid $5,000 for the reservations so they could get in on a weekend night, on a Saturday night, to get into the restaurant. So if you're wondering why you can't ever get in, you go to like those sites, what is it, Resy and some of these other ones where you make reservations. It's impossible because Alex and a couple of other people, he's not alone, there's other scalpers as well, who Ben Leventhal, co-founder of this reservation site, of the site Resy, says that he knows that this is happening. There's not much he can do about it. And if they can beat you to the punch for the reservation, turn it around and sell it. And he said, well, that's just part of life in New York City.
Now, with ticket brokers, I know there's a lot of people that do that for a living. With these, what I'll call reservation brokers, are there a lot of folks that do it, or is it a handful of folks that do it?
From what we can tell, it's a handful of people that are handling all these reservations, because it's usually just the top 10 restaurants, 15 restaurants per se, which is a up in Lincoln Center steakhouse. You can come up with probably 10, 15 restaurants off the top of your head that are just always hard to get into. And we always thought it was just because everybody wants to eat there, which is true. But the other part is that these brokers, they own those reservations and they're making a premium, thousands of dollars in some cases, to sell them to people who desperately want to get into these restaurants.
Now, that is wild. I know you said you're off this weekend. What are you doing this weekend?
You know, it's funny. I heard you say you were double booked.
Double booked.
I have a similar situation this weekend. I mean, I think I'm just have to choose one of the events, even though I've already told both sides that I was going to be there.
And you know what? One of the people, one of the entities that I think I'm going to end up canceling on, they're one of these people, great person, but they will, when I text my regrets or email my regrets, they'll call and have the conversation.
Yeah.
Now, which then will take 10 minutes.
Right.
And I'll be racked with guilt for having to cancel.
Right. And I hate people like that. Because, you know, I just want to be able to text you and say, hey, sorry, I can't come.
Exactly.
Don't, you know, say sorry, you're sorry
too. I wish
too.
There was just a box that I could check online saying, you know, no longer attending.
I mean, it's not that big of a deal that I'm not going to be there.
Right.
But they'll make the hugest deal
out of
it.
Exactly. You know, the problem is we're too dynamic and we add too
maybe
much to these social.
That's
functions.
Exactly what it
are
is.
Are you double booked Friday or Saturday?
Tonight. Friday.
Oh, you're double booked.
Yes.
Okay, so we're in the same situation. Yeah. I wonder if we're double booked at any of the same.
Well,
entities.
I don't know where you double booked.
I'm. I have one in Rockland and one in Midtown.
Who's in Midtown?
Well, it's a birthday party.
Oh, okay.
You double booked at that?
Yeah,
maybe.
Maybe
okay,
I
right
am. Maybe it's the same birthday party.
Well, I'll convey my regrets if you're at that birthday party. All right. Thank you, Noam.
Sure.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Matt, do you want to rep me at either of these two events that I have to be at today?
Depends. What is it?
No, it's a birthday party.
Is there going to be cake?
Yes, I'm sure there'll be cake. Food's good.
Maybe I'll go.
I think you should. All right, Tony?
Just flip a coin.
Well, you've got plans with your mom.
Yeah, I got plans with my mother. But for you, flip a coin.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? We're supposed to go, we're not supposed to, we're going to go into Manhattan Saturday to see a show for Rachel's birthday. She's not going to be up for Manhattan two nights in a row. So that's the kind of decider, I think. But I still hate to back out of that Manhattan event, because it would be fun. Would be fun. I have to be like Michael Keaton in Multiplicity. I need clones. That's the issue. Although it didn't work out that well for Michael Keaton. All right, 800-848-9222. I'm going to get to your calls in a moment. You know, it's funny. I managed to lose my debit card again. Well, I say again, last time it was actually my wife that lost it, but I lost it this time. I think what happened was I went to an ATM and right before Jeffrey Goldstein's bachelor party to deposit some cash. Maybe whatever, last week. And I must have left the card in the ATM machine. And that's happened before. And I go in when I was in Atlantic City to reach for my debit card so I don't have to put everything on my credit card. And I can't find it. I'm looking all over. I can't find it. So I realize it's canceled. So I call gone missing. I call to cancel the card and request a new one. And you know what I love about all these animated systems is you can't talk to a human. So you talk to a machine, and then the machine says, all right, please enter your debit card number. If you don't know your debit card number, press 2. Okay, great. Boom. Press 2. Then he said, all right, if you need to cancel your debit card, blah, 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 blah. Yep, cancel it. Boom. And then it asks you, please enter the last 4 digits of your debit card number. I've already told you I don't know it because I don't have it with me. So finally, I'm able to cancel it. But I can't get a new one without going into the bank branch. So my wife yesterday, I like small banks. I don't like big banks, which is very inconvenient because if you ever need an ATM, you got to pay those ATM fees. But I like small neighborhood community banks. So that's the one that I bank at one. As close as we have to small neighborhood community banks. And I go into that bank branch yesterday and I do my other business. I had a check for $4.75 from a TV show that I was on 17 years ago. And then I tell them about my debit card situation. And as I'm telling my wife I have to go to the bank, she says, do you understand that with almost every other bank in the world, this could all be done online? Not only would you not have to go and take time out of your day that you don't have and wait in line and do this, but you would probably already have a brand new debit card. She's not wrong. I said, honey, I am sacrificing convenience in order to keep neighborhood banks alive. So I go in and wait and talk to this woman. Very nice woman. Deborah is her name. Not Deborah, Deborah. And she might have been the first Deborah that I met. I used to have a sister-in-law named Deborah. Then she decided she wanted to be known by her middle name, Camille. But now that she is an Orthodox Jew, she goes by Devorah. But that's the closest that I've had to someone named Deborah. So anyway, Deborah's able to help me, and I'm thinking maybe I'll get something that day. And she says, all right, they're going to mail it to your house. Okay, great. When we get it? FedEx, next day? You know, because that's if you lose a credit card, Discover or American Express, they'll have it to you next day. FedEx, something. She says, oh, no. It's going to be 7 to 10 days. 7 to 10 days? Well, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to get cash? How am I supposed to make purchases? I know it's inconvenient. She seemed very nice, actually. If I didn't know better, I would have thought she was being a little flirtatious with me. But I think maybe guys think that everybody that gives them even mildly satisfactory customer service is being flirtatious with them. But 7 to 10 days. And then I'm walking out of that bank and I'm thinking, all right. Maybe Rachel's right. Maybe I need to join one of these big banks because that's a little crazy, I think. 7 to 10 days for a new debit card? Fortunately, it doesn't look like anybody has been running all over town at the restaurants that Noam Layden was just talking about running up, you know, large tabs on that debit card. All right. We'll do 15 seconds of fame in a moment. Let me try and squeeze in one or two quick calls here if I can. Ed is in Babylonia. Hello, Ed.
You get my first laugh of the day award about Deborah, by the way. My sister's name is Deborah.
But she's Deborah. She's not Deborah. And again, this was a nice lady. Don't get me wrong. This is what it is.
You know, and you deserve an award for this story about Tyson. You really do. And could you just reiterate in Bloomberg what the name of the article was?
I think the best thing to do, and I honestly don't deserve an award. Almost everything that I mentioned was from this article from Li Fang. And people can read, they can either go to Li Fang, F-A-N-G, his Substack. Just type in Li Fang in Google. And it was dated, and it's from last week. Or you could just go to my Facebook page. I just linked to it, facebook.com/MoranoFan. He really does a great job putting all the pieces together. I go online because I always like to see, you know, if things are being challenged or if anybody doesn't accept this. People have raised this because people shared this on Twitter that Tyson is laying off Americans and replacing them with migrants. And they call this a conspiracy theory. Even the Washington Post, called it a conspiracy theory. They said it's not true, but it is true. They actually are doing this.
2 months ago, I heard about it in Ohio. that people came in, well, it was Friday or Monday, and they said they'd be in, you know, fired on a Tuesday, the entire Tyson plant in Ohio. And I was in North Carolina 2 decades ago, passed the Tyson plant with my friend Artie, and he goes, you see a Tyson plant? He stops. I go, where? It's like a secret plant. They have the evergreen ribs and the chain link fence. You didn't even know the gate was there. And he goes, nobody knows what's going on. Anybody that works there is sworn to secrecy or they lose their job. I looked at him. I said, what are they putting, eight wings on a chicken now? He goes, they don't know.
That's funny. Ed, thank you. Marianne in Queens, very quickly. Go ahead.
Good morning, Frank. I appreciate that article that you're reading, and I would like to have the name of the author. And let me tell you, what you say is absolutely right. They read mostly ignorant. Sometimes they don't even know how to write their name. So that's the majority of people that they are bringing here.
Marianne,
they feel.
Marianne, thank you. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we've got to run, and 15 seconds of fame is waiting in the wings. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Side at Midnight with Frank Morano.
Birthday of Bruce Chariot and Tony's mother and my cousin Liz yesterday and my cousin Lisa today. Today is the birthday of Art Shalek. Does that name ring a bell? I am betting if you are an old school Yankee fan, it does. Art Shalek replaced Mickey Mantle, actually. And today he turns 100, making him baseball's oldest living major leaguer. Happy birthday to you, Art Shalek, a century old. God bless you. All right, let me see what you have to say for 15 seconds, 800-848-9222.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Neil.
Morning, Frank. I have to admit, I like Mike, whose musings each night are quite tight. His 15 Seconds of Fame puts others to shame who repeat themselves night after night.
Raji.
Mr. Levine, Presidents Obama and Biden did not gift Iran even a dime. When you propagandize even once, no one will believe even your truths. President Obama and Biden merely returned tiny amounts of the trillions of...
Paul.
Help exoneree attorney Jeffrey Deskovic help the wrongfully convicted by donating to DeskovicFoundation.org, DeskovicFoundation.org, DeskovicFoundation.org.
Roger.
You know, you could add to your list Stephen Foster, who wrote many of our beloved folk songs from 200 years ago almost. He died penniless in New York also.
Larry.
This isn't going to win you any fame, but the difference between a big bank and a small neighborhood bank is that big banks give you temporary cards. They both rely on the mail system, and the overnight option you probably wouldn't want because you're too cheap.
Frankie.
Yeah, it's a whisper right now, but it's the voice of humanity that supersedes all powers that be and will stop these wars, and there's more profit in peace instead of profiteering in war.
Mike.
Morning, Frank. Where is the outrage in Jewish Hollywood denouncing the college protests and anti-Semitism? For example, where is Mr. Larry David? Lieb, son of Nat. He's a big Jew, but we all know he'd cave for a hot woman and a good...
Frank Morano, good day.